The House, please come to order. Ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to take a point of personal privilege and explain something that occurred this morning. When the motion was made to lay back Senate Files 95 and 62, Representative Patton did that at my request because I knew that there was an amendment coming out on 62, and I had an amendment that I wanted to speak to him about. When it didn't happen to be laid back, then the two amendments that were out there were numbered, and my amendment happened to be numbered number one. Representative Patton's amendment was numbered number two. Yesterday, Representative Patton had showed me a draft of his amendment that I then used to craft my amendment. So any brilliance in the amendment came from Representative Patton, but I simply dumbed it down to what I had in that. So I just wanted to recognize Representative Patton's contribution to that, which was contrary to his wishes, but did want you to know how that had actually come about. It was rather ungainly this morning when suddenly it was back on third reading and then the amendments were flipped. So thank you for that opportunity. We're at that order of business of consideration. Oh, excuse me. Chairman Illaway, you're not going to talk to us about the symphony again, are you?
No, and I'm not going to sing it either.
Thank you.
No, that's not.
You may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been asked several times by members of the body in regards to blue books, some people that did not get them the last time, and so forth. State Archives will be here Wednesday. Next Wednesday, we'll announce it a couple times in the rotunda. They'll be there from 8 until 2, and so they will have a full amount of blue books, sets 1 through 4, volume 5, CDs, and so forth. So we'll announce it a couple times, but I know some of you are interested.
Madam Minority Caucus Leader, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to ask you to please introduce with us today, we have from Laramie County Community College, the dental hygienists who are going to be graduating in May. There's 18 students, and they're from all over Wyoming, outside the state and the country, actually. And their instructor here, Pauline Phillips, would you guys please stand there in the West Gallery back there? Welcome.
Welcome to the Wyoming House. Representative Biaggi, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In our right up here, I have one of my former biology students, anatomy physiology student, went out to work in the Trona Mines, worked his way up through being an electrical guy. And anyway, he's head of human resources for Solvay. Really proud to have Jim Maxfield here. He's here to protect his workers and workers' rights.
Welcome to the House, Jim. Chairman Landon, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to just take a minute to make an observation that I think we've seen more objections to bills being laid over this session than we have in the entire 10 years that I've been here. And just as a common courtesy, as a deliberative body, unless there's really some reason to ram something on through, unless we have a time limit or whatnot, I'd be kind of cautious about overruling somebody's attempt to work and make things better. So I just thought I'd make that comment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. Good point. We are at that order of business of consideration of Joint Conference Committee reports. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee Report number 226 on House Bill 9. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move, pursuant to Joint Rule 2-4, I move that the House recede from its non-concurrence and adopt the Senate amendments. And I think we do that, Mr. Speaker, if I just move adoption of
We'll consider that you have just moved it. Would you explain it, please?
Yes, I will explain it. Ladies and gentlemen, House Bill 9 is the clustered subdivision bill. It went to the Senate, and the issue that we ask you to vote on non-concurrence was about the acreage for taxation as agricultural real estate. We wanted to go talk to the Senate and be sure that we were all on the same page. We think we are. We all signed off on it. The Senate lowered the acreage to 35 acres for taxation of agricultural real estate in a platted subdivision. So, if the open space in a clustered subdivision is 35 acres or more, and it meets all the other requirements for agricultural taxation, the income, the use, all that sort of thing, then the mere fact that it's included in a plat would not prevent it from being taxed as agricultural real estate. And there was some question in our mind whether that ended up being set at 140 or 35. It's set at 35. There's a companion bill to this, House Bill 10, that's coming back. They did the same thing in House Bill 10. And so as this stands, if we concur with the Senate amendments, then for taxation purposes, any piece of property within a platted subdivision of 35 acres or more that meets all the other requirements for agricultural taxation will be taxed as agricultural land, notwithstanding the fact it's included in a plat. And so, Mr. Speaker, I move that we recede from our position and concur with the Senate amendments.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The other details that are included, is it the $10,000 a year gross income? And what else is there? I don't remember. The 35 acres is awfully small. I'm really concerned it's going to hurt our tax base. That's my concern. And that $10,000 figure is too low, too. We really ought to look at raising that at some point. But I was curious as to what the other aspects are.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Madden.
Yeah, I'm not quite ready here, but I guess what I'm looking at here is I can imagine you could take like 144 acres. You could split that 144 acres into four pieces and then also have four pieces of 1 acre. And then you could sell off 1 acre plus 35 acres and everybody would have a 36 acre ownership in the thing. And they're really in a subdivision that really, 35 acres doesn't really suffice for open space, but all it's doing is just serving as tax avoidance to me. I hate to see that change from 140 acres. I really do.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm trying to understand this a little bit more. I think one of the rules was just $1,000 that you just had to have $1,000 of gross sales in 1 year. That was one of the qualifications for ag. Another one of them is it couldn't be in a subdivision. That was specifically written in there, and there were actually some subdivisions that involved over 100 acres of property, and yet if they were in a subdivision, they were not to be classified as agriculture. It seemed that came about partially because of the difficulty that the assessors were having in trying to figure out what is agriculture and what is not, so the legislature tried to put in some rules to help define that. It seems to me that the properties within a subdivision that had common lands would likely have a greater assessed value and sell for a greater price if indeed they were perceived as having higher value than the very same amount of property within a subdivision that did not have common ground. And so it almost seems like almost a double taxation to tax the property of where the house is and then to put another tax on the common land. Was that a consideration, or is that I just thought I'd raise that point. I'm not sure that we want it. I'm not quite sure how to value that, but it doesn't seem to fit in either category, really.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, just to sort of reference back to what we did last year in large acre subdivisions, all this does is it puts it on a consistent basis across all the types of subdivisions, because what we made this decision last year and said those parcels that are between 35 and 140, as long as they meet the requirements of ag taxation, they will qualify. They won't be disqualified merely because they're in a subdivision. And that's all we're doing with the cluster developments. And so without agreeing to this change, you have this sort of weird anomaly where you may have a 70-acre parcel that qualifies and you're in a large-acre subdivision, you get ag taxation, but if you're in a cluster subdevelopment, you don't. This just makes it consistent across all the kinds of subdivision. That's really the main goal of this the Senate's amendments.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem, could you come up, please?
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Sorry to interrupt your lunch. The that last comment confused me a bit. On the large acre subdivision, I thought it was still tax law that if you were in any subdivision, you could not get the ag exemption. And maybe I just misunderstood what the statement was, but so now what we're being asked to do is agree that the Senate second reading amendment number one that takes it to 35 acres, any subdivision lot in a cluster development over 35 acres or more would receive ag taxation if it meets the other elements. And that example by the good representative from Buffalo points out some of the things that happen in subdivision development and why things occur the way they do. Would you want to do a cluster development under this new statute just to get that ag exemption? And if you had the 1 acre lots, if you had a square with 1 acre lots on each quarter, and then the other four larger lots around it, so they were contiguous, you'd just have contiguous subdivision lots that could be owned by the same people. We could still do that with 140 acres, just take the example up in scale. And what we've tried to achieve through subdivision and what we've worked on are not chopping up open space and try and allow a division of minor subdivisions up to five where you don't have to go through all the DEQ review, because what we had before then was the free exemption. The exemption, anything over 35 acres was not a subdivision, and so you were seeing all these 35-acre lots. What is the effect of acceding to the Senate position in terms of our subdivision policy, whether it's cluster or large lot subdivision or whatever it may be? I know that the subdivision that the requirement that if you're in a subdivision means you don't get ag has been a real source of contention for folks, but I also know that on the other side, there are plenty of people who simply are claiming that they should have the exemption when they're not ag. And the point made by the representative from House District 5, that we need to look at that whole qualification, I agree with that, but we're certainly not doing that in this bill, and we're not doing it on conference or concurrence requests. So those are just some of my thoughts. My mind is a bit muddled at the moment. Thanks.
Mine too. Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's important for us to try to fail safe on the part of really small operators. I mean, they may end up in a subdivision, but you know, a 35-acre hayfield for somebody that's raising prize goats or something is pretty important to them. And so, for that reason, I think that we need to consider that. Thank you.
Representative, anybody else for the first time? Representative Stubson, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just to address some of the issues that the good speaker raised, in this 18-5-317, which is part of the, 316, which is part of the large acre subdivision statutes that we passed last year, Section G, it provided for specifically that lots or parcels included in the large acre subdivision were not to be considered as part of a subdivision for purposes of those tax statutes. So that's how we got it out of there in the large acre subdivision. And so all you look at is what you look at in the case of any other piece of property, which is do you meet the income requirements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think the good representative from House District 5 is probably right. We do need to look at those qualifications, but that has nothing to do, I don't believe, with the issues before you. The issue before you is, do we want to have consistency across the types of developments that we have in this state? And you create a sort of weird disincentive for cluster subdivisions by eliminating this tax treatment there, where you allow it in large acre subdivisions. As a reality check, looking at what the principles behind cluster subdivisions, you're not going to see this very often. You're not going to see very many tracts of larger than 35 acres, because the whole principle behind cluster subdivision is you get greater density. You're going to have a much greater density than 35 acres. So it is going to be the unusual circumstance that you actually have a tract that's large enough and that creates enough ag income that's going to qualify for the ag exemption. So, again, it's merely an effort to make consistency across the different kinds of subdivisions.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, thank you for that explanation and helping me recall that. And the large acre subdivision is anything up to 140 acres in per lot. So I agree that we do need to be consistent. So on and for the concurrence.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. First of all, the income level is $10,000. That could be achieved a number of ways with an agricultural operator. It could be part of a larger tract of ground that's a combination of lease and deeded property, and that income level goes to the operator. As far as saying we might be lowering our tax base, I don't think that's going to be the case, because these are newly subdivided lands that were taxed as ag until these subdivisions were created. And so it's not going to take anything from residential back down to ag, or at least it'd be a rare occasion. But in most instances, it's just going to maintain the agricultural nature of a portion of the ground that is dedicated as the open space in a clustered subdivision. And I think that, and that kind of goes to the question about the house and the land too. We did talk about that, and as I recall, we talked about it last year, and we said what we're trying to do when we look at the big picture is encourage open space, encourage our agrarian lifestyle, encourage the sorts of things that those are the sorts of things that we feel are of great value in our state, and we can best do that by saying that any area that we can maintain as an open space in an ag production cycle is good, and we ought to tax it that way. And so I think when we look at the public policy and the big picture of what we're trying to preserve in our state, It's best done by going down to 35 acres and saying, if you'll dedicate open space on a ratio basis and get at least 35 acres there that has all the other attributes, we'll allow it to be taxed as ag. We're not really lowering the tax base, and at the same time, we create some incentive to preserve that kind of land use, which I believe is what the majority of us wish to do. So I would, again, I speak in favor and would ask the body to concur, Mr. Speaker.
The Joint Conference Committee Chair has moved adoption of the Joint Conference Committee report with a recommendation to vote aye, which it would be the House receding from its non-concurrence and adopting the Senate amendment. So if you agree to adopt the Senate amendments, the vote is aye. We are voting on Joint Conference Committee report number 226 to House Bill 9. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft. Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lebno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
no.
Meyer, Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker.
I
am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 noes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Report Number 226 to House Bill 9. We're at that order of business of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The House is resolved into the Committee of the Whole. Representative Kraft.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for
Madam
our
Chair.
Consideration. Ah, yes, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll move Senate File 73 up to just below Senate File 104.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 42. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 42, introduced by the Local Government Committee, an act relating to the Legislature Select Committee on Local Government Financing. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Miller, Stubbs, Wanitzer, excused, Illaway, Lubno, signed, representing Brown, Vice Chair. The bill was further referred to number 2 on appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Pedersen, Phil, Stewart, no, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, signed, representing Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 42 do pass. There are no amendments, and I would like the good chairman from House District 35 to explain the bill.
Representative Cohey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As many of you are now aware, the Select Committee on Local Government Finance was authorized in the 2007 session laws in the supplemental budget during that year. It was authorized to provide an answer for budgeting reasons by December 1st of 08, and it includes 5 members from the House and 5 from the Senate, with 1 member each from Appropriations, Revenue, Corporations, and Minerals from each of the Houses. After 2 interim sessions, or 5 to 6 meetings, the committee has yet to reach a formula to meet the goals that you read on page 3 in lines 7 through 19, discussing the provision of a what is quoted a workable statutory formula for the distribution of revenues to counties and to cities and towns. What this bill does simply is to reauthorize the committee for another interim to October 1st of 09 to hopefully accomplish the goal required in Section 1. Unless there are questions, Madam Chairman, I call for the question.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Mr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit from some of the folks that may have had the opportunity to serve on the Select Committee. It's my impression and understanding that, especially with what was just said, that there hasn't been a lot of production from this committee, and $20,000 isn't a lot of money, but certainly if we're not going to get a product, I don't know that I could support the legislation, but if folks thought that they were on the precipice of coming up with something great, it sure would be worthwhile to have this committee produce something, but I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Representative Cohey.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and that's quite appropriate. The committee met, I think, 3 times in the interim of 07, and then 2 or 3 times in the interim of 08. Came up with a variety of answers on certain things, but the workable funding situation just was not something that was easily met and reached by the 10 members of the committee. Much of it dealing with the state's uneven financial resources. How do we go back to a form of earmarking with respect to cities, towns, and counties, or what do we do? After some attempt to define what a model community was, or what some attempt, and in that case, the answer was 99 different answers. And in some attempt to try to find what a model county was, the answer was 23 different answers. And we just simply couldn't come to any type of reasonable formula to determine what the minimum needs were to operate a city and town. Many of you have been on city and town councils and have some idea, but you must know that that particular town is unique to any other in Wyoming, and the same answer is as to counties. So I believe there was some consideration among the 10 members of the committee that possibly with a couple of more meetings we might be able to come to a solution. Given the financial constraints of the state over the next 2 or 3 years, the answers within and solutions may be a little bit difficult to come to, but personally I think they can be met.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was my pleasure to serve on that committee. I asked to be put on it, and as a very junior member of this body, I was delighted when I was able to serve on it. For those of you who are newer to the legislature, we've had a couple of very contentious sessions in which we debated vigorously on models that were given to us for the distribution of funding. And in fact, 1 year I voted and returned home to find out that the numbers we'd been given on the floor were in fact erroneous. So one of the good things that the committee did is it said that from now on out, whenever you vote on a funding model, you will be voting on existing numbers and they won't be changed after the session. That was one of the first things that we did. My first surprise as a junior member was that we weren't going to solve this problem in 1 year, that we were going to take 2 years to solve it. And so I dutifully attended all of the meetings, and my good fortune was that I've been quite educated in terms of Wyoming's taxation system and all of the idiosyncratic things that we have across the state, from special districts to fire districts, counties, cities, why we have the kind of situation that we have in terms of trying to come up with an equitable funding system for our local governments. However, imagine my surprise at the last meeting. We had a two-day meeting planned in Casper, and we had a power equalization model that had been designed, which we just basically said this didn't work, and so we're not going to do it. We didn't have any new ideas at that time, and so we said, well, let's cancel tomorrow's meeting. There's no reason to meet for 2 days. Let's just have a bill drafted that says we'll meet for another year. And my question at that time and my question today is, what would make us think we'd know more a year from now than we knew after 2 years of studying it? So I was somewhat frustrated with it. I do caution all of us. I know that when we come back next year, as we see the state's revenues decreasing, we're also going to be seeing our local governments' revenues decreasing. The difficulty with discussing new models when you're in a situation with decreasing revenue and everyone is fighting for their own locality, that you end up with the exact same situation that we faced when we created this committee to start with. It's not that I don't think we should come up with shouldn't attempt to come up with a solution. It's just that I have to ask how another continuation of this will give us an answer when, in fact, it's spent, and they were incredible members of this committee, how they could spend 2 years and not come up with an answer. And so that's my fundamental question with our committee system. And I don't know the answer. I remain hopeful that people, good people, can get together and come up with answers, but I don't know how an extra year would really significantly make a difference. And that's why I question the answer to 2 years study to have another year to study.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the work that we did in this in appropriations, and we've had some really heated debates, because it's usually my county and city, number one in your heart, that takes it on a chin no matter what model you do. It's usually, yeah, I know, and that's right, and I'm still bitter about it, and it was 4 years ago. But I would just say this. The little scuttle that I've heard on this is that really, they haven't really found anything better than what were the mongrelized model, as we call it, part House, part Senate model that we have now. So, if I wouldn't go that far, but if we spend $20,000 to find out that what we have right now is maybe as good as it's going to get, it'd probably be money well spent. We can move on, and because no matter how you do it, there's going to be winners and losers in this deal, and I think it's pretty well staked out. So, I think I'm for the bill, I guess, and hopefully I think they'll come back and say what we're doing is about as good as it's going to get. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I do believe the good gentleman from Natrona County just stole my thunder, because maybe we do, after all of these finding out that we have 99 or 98 different opinions from the municipalities and 23 different opinions from the counties, and we've already got formulas that are making distribution, maybe that means they're more comfortable with the ones that we have than the ones that we've been trying to design. But maybe this $20,000 would be well spent just to make sure that that's the case.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. Sure, there's going to be losers and winners, but there certainly is now. I don't know about the sales tax distribution is flawed, not drastically, but the fuel tax distribution is tremendously flawed. When you have poor counties, such as Goshen County, sending money to rich counties on fuel tax. Something's wrong. I can understand fair and unfair. I can get by with that. But wrong and right, that's a different thing. And I think we ought to work on this a little harder.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I, too, would agree that it was a privilege to serve on this committee, and it is a terrific educational forum, and it's not only for us as legislators, but for our different agencies that are involved in local government funding, both cities, towns, and counties, bringing all these different groups together. We had have had tremendous testimony, and no, we do not have the perfect solution, and I don't think we can if you have a population of one versus a population of 60,000. There's different ways of managing your government at a local basis. We tried to get a uniform cost of doing business for a local government, and that is very difficult, and I don't think we will get that answer. But we did get some uniform reporting put in place with certain dates that are required so that we can get some consistent data that maybe when we are making these decisions in the future will help us to make a smarter decision. And, yes, we did take a combination of both the House and the Senate in the previous session to fund our local government, and it is fairly close. And I will tell you that in public forum, I asked those questions. Are you unhappy with that formula? And no one would step forward on that, certainly. Not last year, anyway. I don't know what they would think this coming year, but I know that they do need to work on it. And the only way we can do that is by keep pushing the envelope to come to a better decision on how we can best assist our local government with future funding possibilities. And as we get tighter with our funds, it will be even more critical for them to even have a better picture of how they run their government. And for that reason, I support this bill.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for the bill. I come from a county and a city who did not fare well in the last budget session. And I believe the task force is needed again. It takes communities like ours a while to get together when something is new like this was. They don't know how to present sometimes the problems they're having. The previous speaker alluded to that. I think we should give them another chance. It may take a while for them to come around to understand the process, but I believe we do need to look at this because we do not have fairness across the state, depending on maybe the size of the communities. So I encourage you to let's do it again, let's have this task force meet, and try to resolve some of the problems that are still out there with our cities, towns, and county financing. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman Kraft. One observation and one question. To share an observation with you is to suggest that we reevaluate our select committee and special committee programs, that perhaps we would be a little bit to have an advocate for the product and for the research if these kinds of efforts were subcommittees of your standing interim committees. That way, both the House and the Senate become informed. Both comes up with advocates of positions. And then lastly, but not the least, is that they automatically terminate. And that's not a bad happening with many of our special committee functions. So that's my observation, and made based on the study of other legislatures. The question I have is to the former members, was any thought, I do understand the emphasis of distribution, but is there any thought of helping out counties and cities by giving them authorization to expand their taxing opportunities? And I suggest that on the basis that not all towns, not all cities, and not all counties have the same kind of financial demand. So if we can think of other opportunities, if we did it with a joint interim committee, subcommittee function and activity, you might come back with some bold statements that are rejected by some counties but might be to the best interest and welfare of others. So my question there is, have we thought in those kinds of terms? Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Further discussion before the sponsor? Chairman Cohey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. I think this has been a valid discussion. You know, most of you have served on interim committees, and those of you that have certainly know that there exists no real burning desire to spend warm summer days in a room discussing local government finance. But this one has been staffed by typically seasoned and more mature membership of the committee of the legislature. Much of the discussion in the last 2 years has dealt with the sharing of excess mineral wealth. That was the creation of the discussion in the footnote in the budget in 2007 in the first place, is, you know, ample discussions from our city and town partners and our county partners that the formula is skewed one way or the other. Hardship counties, hardship communities need more money, and mineral counties and cities and towns within those counties in mineral producing areas need hardship monies. And there was a great deal of frustration right here on this floor about what do we do. That was the genesis of the committee and remains that. The answers out of the reauthorized committee, given the financial condition of the state now, will be much, much different than I expect they would have been had we developed an answer 2 years ago. We would have been, talk about a waste of time. We would have proposed some type of revenue sharing event with our local governments, which probably is not going to happen over the next 2 or 3 years because of the lack of excess mineral wealth. Failure of this bill will certainly not mean the sun won't shine. But the lack of answers from 5 to 6 interim meetings and the frustration should speak volumes to the frustration of our city and town councils, city and county commissions about, you know, we know that money is out there when it is out there. And we certainly would like to have some of it, because as the state grows, we all live in cities and towns. We all live in counties. We don't all live in this one. Not all of us. Some do. But, frankly, it should be shared, that reasonable wealth. And I think the state has done a remarkable job of investing its mineral wealth over the past few years, highways, water development projects. But it's done an extremely good job also of sharing that revenue with cities, towns, and counties, and trying to come up with a formula that makes sense to everybody is nigh on to impossible. So, like many committees, you know, knowing there's life out there, it would be easy just for the committee to give up and say, you know, there's better things to do, and if we can't come up with an answer, I think the committee would have come to that conclusion during its last interim meeting, as the good representative from Washakie County had mentioned. The question from my friend from Sheridan County, the discussion of self-generation from within for city and town councils and counties did come up, but it hasn't been explored and examined to the level, and it has been around here, that, as far as I know, for nearly 11 years now, and I'm sure beyond. You can imagine that when the discussions do come up, for example, for the allowance of a form of taxation, whether it be property tax or sales tax or the things that we have available to us here in the state of Wyoming, that many city and town council members say, you know, really, I'd rather the legislature did that, because I don't, as a city and town council member, really don't want to vote to do that. And you can imagine that a member of a county commission really does not, they would like to have the authority, but maybe a vote from the public. They don't want the vote from the governing body. But, you know, to my friend from Sheridan County, that is a valid option, that those governing entities ought to have the authority to do that, and because taxation discussions often are best held when nearest to the public itself, when they have the investments to make.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Madam Chairman, in the bill it talks about that the committees to develop a workable statutory formula, and, you know, I don't know if you can do that or not, but, and I can appreciate how hard it is to do because of the work we did last year in Appropriations Committee and then here on the floor, and then the Senate did some work, and we ended up with a, I would call it a mongrelized formula, where we put half the money through the House formula and half through the Senate formula, and that's how we distribute the money now. But in that process, it was really hard to come up with anything, because it's difficult to figure out what the costs are, and they all have different accounting systems, and I just wondered if you wanted to talk about that a little bit as far as accounting systems and data from the cities and towns, if the committee was able to get reliable information like that. And I just wonder if that should be part of this bill, that they bring back recommendations to get standardized might not be the right word, but that's the only one I can think of right now, but data and accounting numbers from the cities and towns and counties.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't know if this is really an appropriate question or not, or if it is a question, but I think that I would like to see this committee continue, and if they don't do anything else, they come up with some kind of a firm policy on enterprise accounts. We've got some municipalities that are giving their enterprises away. Some of them are trying to charge what they need to for water and sewer, but you can't tell what the needs should be and what a formula would be unless you make sure that all these enterprise accounts are on a pay-as-you-go basis in these towns. And I think that's kind of one of the things we've been battling. You know, how do you tell which is a poor town or a rich town? You know, I guess my town could be looked at as poor because they lose money in their water account and their sewer account. But that's not the state's problem. And we shouldn't be passing out money or putting it into a formula to reward people or reward municipalities that refuse to cover their operational costs in these enterprises. These are enterprises like water, sewer, garbage. You can go on and on. I suppose swimming pools, you know, we don't really argue about that so much. It's kind of hard to, you know, put the hammer on people that use swimming pools. But, you know, certainly with water and sewer, if you don't do that, what you're doing is you're over-allocating resources into these abnormally cheap enterprises. You got water systems that are too big. That's why you drive into some towns. You got water running down the gutters because the marginal cost is so low. And you got extra capacity in the water departments. Same way with the sewer department. And if you get everybody on the same basis, I wouldn't even care if you'd say, you know, nobody's going to get any more state money until they can show that they've got their enterprise funds on a pay-as-you-go basis. And then, you know, we're going to have limited resources next year, but certainly we don't want to spend these limited resources on a program that is all built around subsidizing expenses like water and sewer and garbage and things of that nature. So I'd just like to see it continue, and I'd like to see them focus on that first and then build the formulas for distributions after that's done. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A question for the bringer of the Senate file. It seems to me like the people who were on that committee all had a good experience about understanding the circumstances better. And would it be your opinion that to the fullest extent possible to have those same members that went through this last interim be on the committee going forward, recognizing some people might not be up for it, but we would have a base of knowledge that you could build on, and it seemed to me like that might be an efficient way to make this thing work even better the next time they meet.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. To my good friend from Fremont County, the discussion in the bill of the workable statutory formula, you know, to date, the committee, the only real answer it has is to go back to an earmarking model, which is not all that, you know, still a little bit dreaded by particularly those people on the western end of this building. It's something that this floor has talked about, you know, some return to with respect at least to cities, towns, and counties, and maybe some other funded entities out of mineral wealth that that possibly we return to some form of revenue share that's statutorily directed. And to date, that's the only answer that the committee has really come up with. Some of the issues have been addressed, you know, with respect to, you know, we've seen the bill on the determination of census or population, and have we received reliable and valid information? I'd say most of the members of the committee would say that they're on some type of information overload, that we were basically fed water through a fire hose for a significant period of time, and without doubt, I believe that that committee was incredibly astute and had a full understanding of the information that it was being that was being delivered. Our own staff here in on this floor and other agencies around the state did an incredibly good job. The State Loan and Investment Board, State Land Investments, an incredibly good job of providing the information requested by the committee well in advance and time for the committee to take a look at it. You know, so it was able to get the committee down the road a little bit prior to some of the meetings. To my friend from Johnson County, one of the bills that you saw here was a common audit date to allow, you know, all cities, towns, and counties, and just about every agency within the state, with the exception of the people that that are attorneys in the state belong to, and our highway building system for a couple of years. They'll all be around to the same audit period, therefore on the same reporting period. And what the request was for, with respect to cities, towns, and to counties, to come up with a standardized, transparent model to where we could look into each city, town, and county and say, why is that particular county, and he has a good point, why is that particular town or why is that particular county have an elevated sewage rate, or why do they have an elevated water delivery rate? And there might be some answers in there, but that does bring around some very valid questions. The committee did discuss that, so we are, I believe, by fiat, the Department of Audit is working on a transparent form where ultimately all of us can get in and look at any given time what our cities, towns, and counties, similar to what the state should be doing, that the public should be able to dip in there and take a good look at it online, and we can measure apples to apples. You know, you get delivered to you each year here county funding and how counties compare, but the information that you truly need is really in the details, and often we're not really given that unless it's upon request. So without doubt, we need to look and compare every city and town together and figure out what the anomalies are in each of those cities and towns. Why does it cost a county 50 miles to the west of here? Why does it cost them more to provide services as compared to their revenue stream? Well, they have a lot of people living in that particular community that don't pay tax. Many of them are going to school there, but yet they drive up and down on the streets, and they use the water system, but yet their revenue stream is somewhat different than many other places. Take a community up in the natural gas producing region in the northwest part of the state, southwest part of the state, that has an awful lot of people living there that are on a temporary and transient nature, but they're certainly using the schools and they're certainly using the swimming pools and the amenities of that community. Why does it cost more for water delivery in that particular community than it does others? You know, there are answers almost in all of those questions, but not always. So those are answers that we need to find, to provide those answers and to question each one of those locales. To my good friend from Natrona County from House District 57, I'm sure there would, of the 10 members of that committee for the last 2 years, there are probably some that would beg to be off of it. But would there be some validity in appointing some of the same members? As we all know, that the more you know about a subject and the better prepared and the better instructed you are on any particular topic, the better you become at the answer. So without doubt, I would suggest that the membership of that committee should stay as relatively intact for as much institutional memory and knowledge as it possibly could.
Further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 42 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. Senate File Number 42 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Dan Zwanitzer, privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I would like privilege of the floor. Today in the gallery, we do have 36 cadets from the Wyoming Youth Challenge Program. Barbara Smith is our instructor. They are throughout the gallery on both sides. They're already attentive and up, so if you'd please make them feel welcome.
Welcome to the House. Representative Millen.
May I have privilege of the floor, Mrs. Chairman?
You may.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairwoman. I wanted to introduce, we have several groups here today with the General Federation of Women's Club. We have from Yoder, Wyoming, they're members of the Women's Club. And then we also have the XJWC people from Cheyenne, and also, which I'm a member of, the Cheyenne Civic, Women's Civic League of Cheyenne. They're all up there. Please say hi to them there in the South Gallery. And just to let you know, there's several of us up there, Patty and Jan, and several of the gals that work as the secretaries in the standing committees are also with Women's Civic League. So you're well represented by this group. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the House. Chairman Berger, did you? Oh, there you go. Excellent. What a great idea. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 124. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 124, introduced by the Appropriation Committee, an act relating to public funds, education reserve funding. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Connolly, Kraft, Dirks, Yagi, Lubno, McKim, McComey, Teeters, signed representing McComey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Jorgensen, Phillips, Stewart, no, Hammonds, absent, Harshman, and Pedersen, signed representing Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises, does it have an amendment? When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 124 do pass. And I turn it over to the Appropriations Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Berger.
Well, Madam Chairman, we're so excited to work together. Actually, I'm turning the floor management of the bill, Senate File 124, over to Representative Harshman.
What a cooperative crowd. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Daryl, you ready back there? Sergeant at Arms, I told him we could do this in 2 minutes. Teasing. Okay, yesterday we put this on your tray late in the day because we thought we were going to get to it, so it's probably in your circle file. One side is this chart that has my name on it. The other side is this chart that was developed by staff. This chart is the official chart of the school foundation program, reserve funding. I made this simplified chart just to kind of show you what this bill does. Currently, so if you look at this chart, you have the school foundation program where we make up the local guarantee. There are certain communities that exceed the local guarantee, and we recapture that money. And I'm sure about five of you districts like to hear that word, recapture. So their excess property taxes go to help the rest of us hardship counties. And there are no more rebates, of course, constitutional amendments, so that doesn't go back. So really the 12 mil property tax, statewide property tax, is really the key that funds the school foundation program as well as federal mineral royalties. Those augment local resources. Some locals don't need any augmentation, others do. We have a $100 million reserve already, so if we have excess school foundation program monies, we have a $100 million reserve. What we would like to do in statute is what we've been doing through budget amendments on an ad hoc basis is move any excess after the $100 million to the school CapCon account. We have paid for all of our schools primarily through coal bid bonus money, coal lease bid bonus money. That is a very unpredictable source. Well, we've kind of rolled and paid the money back at different times, but we want to keep this flow going to the school CapCon account. If we have excess after that, which we probably won't, we will hold another coffee can where we keep 50% of the current appropriation for projects and major maintenance in a reserve account. This past biennium, we funded $400 million to school CapCon and major maintenance. So we would approximately be a $200 million coffee can. The rest of the money would hold and would not sweep to the Common School Permanent Land Fund until the end of the biennium. So you would have two chances to look at it before we swept any money, which I think is a prudent thing to do. Currently, we have set up a sweep at the end of this year, and this will delete that session law language. I'd stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? If not, are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 124 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate file number 124 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file number 69. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 69, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to fertilizer. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Zwanitzer, Dan, excused, Blake, signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlek?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File number 69 do pass. And, Madam Chairman, at this time, if I could ask that a representative behind me, he has requested privilege to the floor, and he needs to do that now. So I will defer for a moment, and I'll get back to this.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of days ago, I introduced to the House the new president of Northwest College and a vice president for external relations. I was happy to do that. But today, my favorite Northwest College official is here this afternoon taking in some deliberations in the House. It happens to be my daughter here in the South Gallery. The Shelby Wetzel is the executive director of the Northwest College Foundation from Powell.
Welcome, Shelby. Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the House. We bring you Senate File 69, fertilizer. There's a couple different sections of this bill that I will make reference to. The first section, beginning on page 1 and line 10, refers to some requirements before this act could be considered in going into effect.
Correct.
Is that the United States Department of Homeland Security will publish the final federal rules under H.R. 2764. This was passed in late 2007, and the feds anticipate that their final rules will be approved by the end of 2009. So the first thing we need to remember is that this act cannot come into effect until the feds pass the rules. Now, this has all really come about since the events of 9-1-1 when the Homeland Security Agency and other federal agencies had really put a ban on the use of the particular fertilizer that we reference here in the first part of this bill, and that's ammonium nitrate. So some of the things that if the feds accept the rule, some of the things that the state will do to get in a position to be able for the producers in this state who use ammonium nitrate as a fertilizer, these would be some of the things that will be required under this act. The first one that we find is in Section 2 and on Line 8 of Page 2. Beginning in Section A, there are three things there that's going to be required. It's under the general term of registration of ammonium nitrate. First thing is that any person who possesses ammonium nitrate or regulated ammonium nitrate materials shall have to be registered with the department. And we heard in the testimony in the standing committee that many of the farmers and ranchers who would use this ammonium nitrate product, they will not be required to register under this act. if they don't really take possession of it. If they contract with a commercial applicator, then they won't be required to go under this registration. So that's something to keep in mind. The second thing that this subsection A does is it allows the director, and here referred to the director of the Department of Ag, to charge an annual registration fee of not to exceed $50. And the third thing in that, starting on line 15 on page 2, is that this will exempt all the coal mines in this section because they're currently being licensed under, as it says there, Chapter 40 of Title 18. Section B, the provision here is that the ammonium nitrate and regulated ammonium nitrate material shall be secured in a secured to provide reasonable protection. That's in compliance with some of the federal regulations come out of Homeland Security, and some of those security measures are contemplated on top of page 3. Fenced lock, storage facility, so forth and so on. Section C, beginning on line 12, a distributor shall record the date of sale and the quantity sold. I think we can see the valid reason for this is just to keep track of where this material is. Some of you will be familiar with the record requirements for those of you who use restricted-use pesticides. This will mirror that same program. All sale in the bottom of page 3, all sale and application records shall be retained by each registered for a period of not less than 2 years. The final thing in this section is found on top of page 4. Registrants shall comply with all federal and state requirements regarding the dissemination of any information. This is really, again, I think we can see the appropriate reason and necessity for this is that this information is going to be private, and you know, we don't want, as a matter of public information, where these stores of ammonium nitrate are. That's simply for security reasons. The next few pages just go into different types of definitions, and I'll let you read them for yourself. The next section I'll draw your attention to is on page 7 under 1114.109, misbranded or adulterated fertilizers, and bring you down to the bottom of that page. A commercial fertilizer, soil conditioner, or soil amendment is adulterated if, and that list of material, you'll find that on page 8 in the quantities there. That's just, again, consumer protection. And it simply says that in this section, misbranded or adulterated fertilizers will be those if the composition falls below or differs from that is purported to possess by its labeling. I mean, that's just good consumer protection there. So if you represent a fertilizer to be such and such, it needs to be what they say it is. And then that section 4 there, commercial fertilizer that contains guaranteed amounts of phosphates or micronutrients contains metals in amounts greater than the level of metals established by the following table. That's somewhat unusual to see this kind of thing in statute, but you see it in other places, so that just lists that. Page 9, if you're into heavy metal, mental, mathematical matriculation, you can go down through there and try to figure out what all that stuff's about, but it's calculations as to guaranteed amounts of this, and I won't go into that. The final thing, Madam Chairman, is I guess on page 10, section E, any penalties resulting from violation of these heavy metal standards shall accrue to the registrant of the material that violates the heavy metal standard. And that, Madam Chairman, members of the House, that is the bill. It allows producers in Wyoming to get back into the use of ammonium nitrates and providing some security measures to put into place. The threat here is probably not all that great, but we need to be a partner to that process for security of this product because it has been used and misused. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll answer any questions. If there are any, otherwise, I'd call for the question.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion. Oh, excuse me. Were you wanting to speak on the bill? Okay, I guess not. Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 69 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 69 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 104. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 104, introduced by Senator Johnson, an act relating to group life insurance limitation on dependent coverage. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it to pass. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Lubnow, Miller, Stepson, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 104 do pass, and I would like to turn it over to the representative from the middle of the state, a co-sponsor.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can walk you through the bill. The deletion of 2617-108A3, that provision is a provision that if you, for example, are providing life insurance for an employee, this limits the coverage for spouses and children to 50% of the coverage of the employee. There was a lot of discussion and not a great many answers about what the source of this provision was, but this simply just takes that out and leaves it up to the marketplace. If an insurer wants to insure up to 100%, they can do that and charge a premium that fits that. If they want to do some other variation, they can do that. So it's really sort of a cleanup measure that I think frees insurance companies and insurers to negotiate policies that best fit the situation. With that, I'd take any questions.
Are there any questions or discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 104 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 104 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 73. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 73, introduced by Senator Hines, an act relating to water development regarding the Gillette-Madison Pipeline Project. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlich, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Philp. No, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlich?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 73 do pass, and I further move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 and ask you to vote no. I will explain the reason for that. In the Standing Committee, we had some discussion about whether it would be appropriate in the case of this Gillette-Madison Water Project to provide a funding source from the AML. And we did some cursory review of some of the AML projects that were in hand, and it was our belief at the time that there was going to be a reversion from one of the projects at the middle of this year, at June 30th of 2009, and that it would be appropriate at that point to sweep those reversions into this funding mechanism for the Madison Water Project, just simply because there's a lot of AML activity in that area. And we found out that that was probably not the thing that some people wanted us to do. So if you would just vote, I move the standing committee amendment. I would ask you to vote no on it, and when you do that, it will restore the funding back to the budget reserve account. So at this time, Madam Chairman, I would again call for the question on the standing committee amendment and ask you to vote no.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Standing committee amendment number one has failed. We are back on the bill. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. With that successful no, I would like to withdraw standing committee amendment number two to Senate file 73. And we'll now turn it over to the good gentleman from Campbell County.
Standing committee amendment number two has been withdrawn. We are back on the bill. Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I present to you Senate file 73, the Gillette-Madison Pipeline Project. Let me give you a little background on the need for Senate File 73. Gillette's population in 2000 was 19,646. Today it's approaching 31,000. The current water supply production capacity is 14.4 million gallons of water per day. The peak use currently with our current population is 15.8 million gallons per day. So we're using about 1.4 million gallons per day in our peak, more than we can produce, and that's when all of the well fields are working and the pipeline's up and running. We've started a voluntary conservation program, and per capita use has dropped from 190 gallons to 153 gallons. The projected future needs for water for the city of Gillette and surrounding area in 2017 will be 24.6 million gallons. In 2027 will be 27.3 million gallons, and in 2037, 30.7 million gallons. So we're talking about a 16.3 million gallon increase in the demand for water in the city of Gillette. In addition to the conservation program, the city of Gillette introduced a tiered pricing structure. So you get a certain amount of gallonage, I think it's 3,000 gallons, at a set price, and then you are charged what they call the penalty price or the conservation price when you use more than that. And that has also decreased water usage. In addition, the city of Gillette's started and encouraged water conservation programs and wise water usage programs, including not planting grass in the medians or planting certain types of grass on the soccer fields. The Gillette water needs have been studied since 2003. Gillette's a growing community with, as we all know, an essential workforce. And so we're stifled in the city of Gillette. We can't grow anymore because we don't have water. We've evaluated all of the potential long-term water sources around Gillette and Campbell County, including Lake Desmet, Keyhole Reservoir, Clear Creek, water from our wastewater treatment plant, effluent release, different aquifer use of coal bed methane-produced water, and the Madison aquifer. The Gillette currently gets 70 to 75% of their water from the Madison and the nearest aquifer located near the city. There's currently 22 million gallons of storage in Gillette, but this is the maximum amount that the Environmental Protection Agency will allow the city of Gillette to have because you have to recirculate water and keep the water fresh. So we've used up all of the storage availability and options that we have. We also need water supply, as you know, for fire insurance rates under the insurance regulations. Currently, the Gillette water supply is a 30-inch line from the Madison Formation or the Madison Field north of Moorcroft. So what happens is we have a well field over by Devil's Tower, 42 miles from Gillette, and we pipe that water, the 42 miles, to the city of Gillette through a 30-inch pipeline. the city of Gillette stopped all sales of bulk water to industrial customers. We've reworked all of our Fort Union wells, adding 625 gallons per minute to the city's capacity at a cost of over $2 million to the city of Gillette. This project, five more wells would be drilled into the Madison Aquifer by Devil's Tower. The water would go into two storage tanks and gravity flow for around 30 miles to a pump station on Donkey Creek near Rosette. Then it's pumped the remainder of the way to the Gillette distribution system. The way this project works, most of the right-of-way is owned by the state of Wyoming, but there is right-of-way that needs to be acquired. The right-of-way is along the highways. These wells that would be drilled, the five wells in the Madison, would be 16-inch diameter, and each is expected to produce about 1,430 gallons per minute. A new large pump station would be needed. This water is blended from water from the well field near the city of Gillette, and no treatment is required. What we're here asking for now is the initial phase, the funding of the initial phase of the plan. It's a total of seven phases. Phase one is the design of the groundwater exploration and drilling, design of the project, permit procurement, engineering, right-of-way, and other phases of getting the pipeline construction and the pump station's design. Right now, we're just getting the design of the project. In the long-term water supply report, the hydrogeologic properties of the Madison were discussed in great detail, and reports that Madison is capable of producing the quantity of water that is needed to meet the 30-year projected demands of the city of Gillette. The drawdown of the Madison water are projected to be much smaller percentage-wise in relation to the total water column available in the aquifer compared to similar draws from the Fort Union aquifer. The wells in the existing Madison are completed into underground caverns, and they make a yield of around 1,430 gallons per minute with minimal drawdown. The wells outside the caverns have been fractured presumably into these caverns, and they also produce large yields. The report concludes that the Madison aquifer is the only source available that is projected to meet the city of Gillette's drinking water needs and demands in the next 30 years. Currently, the Wyoming Water Development Commission has commissioned an engineering firm to conduct a water system regionalization study to determine the viability of a regional water system, including the towns in the area of the good chairman of the Agricultural Committee's district, as well as towns in my region and in others in that northeast corner region. And that report is due later this year. If the report recommends a regional system, this project is designed to support that system. The project is proposed to be designed and construction in phases beginning July 2009 and completed in 2016. If the demands warrants a phase 7, then five more Madison wells could be drilled and the cost is currently included in the total cost estimate. But the only thing we're talking about with this funding request is funding of phase one, which is the design and right-of-way acquisition and legal work. An application was sent to the Wyoming Water Development Commission last October under their standard rules and conditions. And while the commission supports this project, they were unable to take on the project because of the cost. And the effect would have been having to eliminate many smaller projects, which just isn't right. That's why we're here with Senate File 73. If you look at the bill is nearly a standard Wyoming Water Development Commission bill. Page 2 of the bill is definitions. Page 3 of the bill talks about the sponsor, which would be the City of Gillette, shall contract for the design, groundwater exploration, drilling, permit, permission, and then the Wyoming, and then to administer the contract. Upon execution, the sponsor can complete the design. The project financing right now, the estimated total project budget is $226 million. Here we're asking for phase one, the partial budget amount of $16,750,000 to be distributed two ways. The first way is a project grant of $11,222,500. And then a loan from the Wyoming Permanent Mineral Trust Fund paid by the City of Gillette in the amount of $5,527,500. The appropriations are contained on page 6. The amendment from the Senate said that instead of distributing the money, that the state treasurer will make available to the commission the money. The Wyoming Water Development Commission supervises the distribution of the money to the city of Gillette and to those people who contract. City Gillette has to offer security on page 6. We establish a repayment schedule, a sinking fund, and then the City of Gillette can't make any commitments or take any action until the Wyoming Water Development Commission has approved the budgets and the project. If you look at the middle of page 7, if without good cause the City of Gillette abandons the project, they have to pay back all of the money in the loan and all of the money in the grant to the state of Wyoming. So if we get cold, wet feet, we have to pay you all back. Page 7 and 8 have some interesting provisions in them, and that is that the state of Wyoming owns a portion of the wells based upon the proportion of the money put up by the state of Wyoming versus the money put up by the city of Gillette. And if there's a sale of that water to anybody or a sale to the system, the water is paid back in the amounts proportionate to the amount the state of Wyoming put up. And so if there's any profit, the state of Wyoming would participate in the profit. The pages 7, 8, and 9 are standard clauses in water contracts, and the standard bills that we've done in the past. The loan from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund is not a new idea. This legislature has done it lots of times, and particularly with big water projects. Projects that have received and on nearly exactly the same split, 66.6% and 33%, those projects would be Cheyenne, Green River, Rock Springs, Natrona County, the Sheridan area, and the Shoshone Municipal. If you want specifics on those projects, ask me, and I can get you the specific data. The treatment plants have been mostly 100% loans, while other plants were loans from the PMTF, or from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, and water development. Now, here's kind of an interesting chicken and the egg problem. We can't go to the voters in the city of Gillette for a bond issue or a capital facilities tax until we know how much this costs. We can't know how much this costs until we do the design and construction. So that's why we're here asking for phase one dollars this way. The city of Gillette plans to increase water rates and tap fees, and they're considering a capital facilities tax to pay their share of this project. But we have to know the amounts before we can do that. I guess with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Is there discussion? Representative Miller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some questions on especially the coal bed methane water up in this area. I'd heard quite a few years ago that this water was going to be used for the Gillette water system. I even heard about reinjecting some of the coal bed methane water locally into the, it must have been the Fort Union aquifer that you're pumping out of now. This just seems like a lot of money to be spending right now in this economy that may have some issues going down the road. So I would just would like to know about the coal bed methane, because doing some quick calculations, it seems like only 600 coal bed methane wells would meet the 16 million gallon a day rate, and I think there's tens of thousands of coal bed methane wells up there. And while some of the water is potable, some would have to be treated, I'm sure. But again, someone else is paying for these wells and is paying to get it to the surface. How come we can't use some of that water for this purpose?
Chairman Shelders.
Madam Chairman, the answer to that question is that the city of Gillette did study that, and the quality is there, but unfortunately the quantity that they needed wasn't there on a continuous basis. As most people are aware, as you produce the coal bed methane wells, eventually the water starts dropping off, and that's what was happening for those that, at least in testimony before the coal bed methane task force, that was the issue.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I know this bill is probably going to go through, but I had to put my two cents in. I generally support water development. However, there are a few things with this particular project that kind of rub me the wrong way. Number one, this community has more resources than almost any other community that we know of, whether it's engineers, construction company, cash, especially from that rebated recapture money that they got to keep. I have a hard time spending money on a community that wouldn't share their wealth in other ways with the state, but then they want our help in this aspect. They have the resources. There's a lot of different options out there, so I would just like some discussion on this.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My voice is starting to give out. Maybe I need a glass of $8,000 water. Two things. We were told in committee that some of these infrastructure projects for the development commission, water development, are going to grow in size. And I'm wondering if the trend is going to begin that these things are not under the umbrella of the omnibus water bill, that we come and consider these independently. And my freshman observation is that entity and that group and that commission is the best group to make the validity and to make the decisions on these things. So if that's the case, at some point we need to start kicking into that, to that fund. This thing got dumped to us to consider because it is such a big price tag, as I understand it. The other thing is I would applaud the community's efforts in conservation. I've been paying close attention to the neighbors to the south as they're trying to build a reservoir that's several hundred million dollars. It's going to be on 287 and block the city of Laramie and the city of Fort Collins. And they've done significant efforts to explore, well, what's the most bang for our buck for dollars, dollar for dollar for our taxpayers. And as you know, they don't have the wealth that we do up here in this state. 153 gallons per person, if you look at other communities, they still have a ways to go. They can drop that line quite a bit further. And, you know, I don't know, maybe you ask the citizens of Gillette to say, hey, would you like a check for $200 if you'll cut your water down, or do you want to keep using it and you have to pay for it? There's a lot of room on the conservation end, and I don't know that we have yet to explore all those efforts. There's about 30 to 40 different conservation efforts that you can do in cities, that cities are forced to do, that really don't have the option here or the financial resources. And because we do, and we know where the money comes from in this state, a lot of it, we do have those options. We're sort of simply ignoring these. So I would urge this body to explore, to be cautious and to look more at conservation with waters. And it's going to be, as the future goes on, this is going to be increasingly more important, and we can't just throw money at it to solve the problem on demand.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a few questions, just because it's just something I don't understand very well, and I just need to be educated. My understanding is there's already a well field in the same area. You're going to drill five new wells and then put a new pipeline in that will be right next to the old pipeline and bring the water into Gillette. First of all, that's my first question. Let's make sure I have that understanding correct. My second question is, how did you pay for the first field? It sounds like you drilled quite a few already into the Madison. When was that done, and how much did that cost you then? And then my last question is, since you're just needing the initial money, couldn't you just put that on a SPET tax, on a special excise tax, like many of our other communities do, to get the initial study done and then come to us for the bigger chunk of money, but get this initial money done locally through a SPET tax, potentially? That was just my question.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Traditionally, the state has funded, my understanding, and testimony appropriations, the two-third, one-third ratio on this. And really, I think this is not the time to kind of deviate from that with Gillette. We'd all love to jump on the hate the camel bandwagon, particularly me. I'm teasing, Representative. And we've been assured that this will not go to any funding for a third satellite campus so they can keep one high school. But really, it's really policy what we've done in the past. And I think it's really important to realize this is just the first phase of this. There's going to be probably another $200 million come before us. And I think there'll be plenty of time when Gillette then gets in with the county and regionalizes this water system and brings in the wealth of the county, the city. There'll be plenty of time to negotiate about maybe a change in percentages or loans or who pays for what. But I don't think this is the time to do that. So I'd encourage you to support the bill, and we sure appreciate all the coal that comes out of Campbell County and all the recapture money as well. So with that, on in support of the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative McKim.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm just concerned about the percent that they're talking about in here. I just recently testified on behalf of my local hospital seeking a loan from the investment board, and they were simply told that nothing less than 5%. And yet, looking at the bill here, it's 4%. So does that mean I encourage people to bypass the investment board and come directly to the legislators for a lower percentage? Thank you.
Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just share with the body some of the testimony in the standing committee and where this bill was heard, and it will help maybe answer a couple of the questions that have been asked in regard to this project. One of them with the conservation, we heard testimony in the committee that the city of Gillette in the last 2 years has developed, and perhaps it's even been longer now, but the effect of their conservation program has been a reduction, I believe, at about 2 million gallons of water a day during their peak summer season, and I think that's been fairly significant. Some of the other questions that came out of the standing committee in regard to the Campbell County participation, the county participation in the Gillette project, and it was pointed out there that in no other circumstances in the history of the water development has any county ever been asked to be a co-sponsor with a municipality in a water development project. And the question is, I guess the comment is, why should we start now? So that was some of the testimony. The other thing is just simply with Gillette being somewhat, from that area, they have tried over the years to develop their water. They had a project south of Gillette a number of miles through water development. They tried to look at a new well field down there, and it just simply didn't work. The early settlers in Gillette just established a town where there was trillions of tons of coal but very little water, and they're paying for that now. There's no underground rivers or anything in that area. There's no flowing streams in that area. And they just have to go to about 42 miles into that Madison to make that work. So in support of the bill, and would ask that the body favorably consider this. Thank you.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll support this bill, and I want you to look at it a little different way. All of you know that I've always fought for more funds for water development accounts. Well, we're getting $11 million more in the water development account right here from the budget reserve account, because otherwise Gillette would be asking for that money from water development account one. Now it's the commission is going to handle the facilities on there, and we would be we have that much more money developing water in the state of Wyoming. That's one way you can look at it. The The other thing is you want to remember that the state does pretty well share in those severance taxes, federal mineral royalties, and those other things. A lot of it arrived in that county. We decided a long time ago that those resources belong to everybody in the state, and that's been pretty well taken care of. So I think this is a good water project, and we ought to go forward with it.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On and for Senate File 73. When you look back at water projects, large water projects like this that we funded in Wyoming, and the good representative from Gillette has a printout showing some of those. I recall the Shoshone Municipal Pipeline project in Park County that began in the mid-'80s and was $37 million at that time, two-thirds grant and one-third loan. And that pipeline goes from the base of Cedar Mountain in Cody to the Montana line almost in Franny and Deaver, 65 miles at least, and then led to providing rural water, domestic water, to many of the rural areas of Park County and Bighorn County, and it's just been a godsend and a wonderful project, and that project has not had to levy any taxes on anyone. It pays its way with operations and maintenance assessments and fees. And many of the other ones like this, of this scale, are equally, if you brought them up to current dollars, they'd be fairly staggering looking at them today. But they're very worthwhile, and I have become educated about this project. It is needed, and I urge your support of the bill. We can talk about particular funding mechanisms in it, and it's already gone through a variety of readings, and we'll have a couple more. But I would hope that you would support the project. Thank you.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think there was some clarification from the good speaker from Park County about a project in Park County, but there were several others cited that I think I'd like to have a little more comfort with. I think it was Cheyenne, there was Green River, Rock Springs, and Casper. And I can't recall Casper ever being in on one of these where there was a two-thirds grant from the water development funds. And that wraps around to my second part of my question, is a little clarity on what those projects were, and apparently there's a list out there somewhere. But why wasn't this request for money to the water development fund versus the budget reserve account? Because it's it looks like a way of going around what is a special funded mechanism in the state of Wyoming for identifying projects and then funding them.
Chairman Elloway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Seems to me back around 1971, Cheyenne did stage one and stage two. After checking with them, that totaled somewhere in the $100 million range. Cheyenne bonded themselves for $40 million. There was a $40 million grant and then a $40 million loan in that vicinity, round figures. So I can't see why they can't in the northern part of the state do something similar rather than come into the state for the entire amount or close to the entire amount.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you. The way that the loan grant works is that's decided by the Water Development Commission, and they review that every August. They'll review it again this year, and they will talk about going back to 50-50. Because the funds are so limited, maybe we get better coverage. But right now, those projects are 67-33%. And so that's the reason for this. That and the 4% is the loan that they've established. And my recommendation will probably be that if I have anything to say about it, we'll be back to 50-50. One reason we're taking it wasn't in the water development funds is we're out of funds. We've used them all. We're short on. We've been way more requests than there are funds in the account 1 and 2 and 3. So that's one of the reasons we're gathering up a little bit more money in water development at this time. I had one other thing I was going to answer there, but that 4% is the standard for water development loans right now. That can change. It has changed, but that's all set by criteria and at the time, and that's where it is right now. Well, oh, yeah, thank you. Cheyenne, Laramie County, since inception, has well over $90 million in grants in Laramie County since inception of water development accounts, counting phase one and two. Not counting loans or other things, but $90 million in grants. I know that one. Casper has received a considerable number of projects on water development funds. I don't know, $100 million? I don't know how much that was. But I know in the bill we passed yesterday, there's $7 million for Laramie. So we're passing this thing around pretty good, and I'd urge your adoption of that.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up comment and then another question for the bringer of the bill. The follow-up was just on the coal bed methane from our fine representative and chairman from Park County. That's true. The coal bed methane wells, they come on, sometimes none of them, sometimes the well doesn't produce any water at all and starts producing gas right away. Some of them it takes a year or two or three or four of pumping that water to get the natural gas to come. So there is a cycle of life for those wells. It probably averages 18 to 30 months. But I just went back to my desk, got on the internet, plugged in a quick search, and I came up with 1.85 billion gallons are pumped per day out of the coal bed methane in the Powder River Basin right now. That's less than 1% of the city of Gillette's water needs. I don't want to take anything away from Gillette. They do a tremendous job creating wealth for the state of Wyoming. But, you know, if you got water laying on the surface, let's just pick up that water and use that first before we have to go to this $250 million project to bring water to Gillette. That's my problem with this. Make sure we're using what's available. Number one, the coal bed methane water, they say they've looked at it. And then when I was sitting there thinking about it, you know, there's all these huge coal mines in the area. And my guess is the average coal mine there is pumping from between 5 and 10,000 gallons of water a day in the dewatering process. Two or three of those mines, again, by themselves, could meet Gillette's water needs. Again, let's go after the low-hanging fruit first before we go drill these really, really deep and expensive wells. Again, Gillette is growing. It's grown a lot. Of any county in the state, it produces more wealth than any other county in the state. We need to keep them in water, but I'm just trying to go get the low-hanging fruit first.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Well, on Select Water, we did look for the low-hanging fruit, and we weren't able to find much up around Gillette. There's not many trees, but no. We did look at all of those things for water for Gillette, but the wells that have good water have declined, and then the wells that have quite a lot of water, the quality isn't good enough, and it's too costly to treat. And they are treating some water up there now and blending and that sort of thing, but after looking at it on Select Water, we decided that that this really is the best way to go. The other thing that we looked at was whether that would be feasible, you know, to do the treatment. But the treatment is extremely expensive when you try to treat those other kinds of water. So I think this is the best way to go for Gillette. And as far as the, you know, I think we ought to treat them the same as everybody else, I think. I suppose they probably can't afford to pay more. But, you know, I kind of think we ought to treat them the same as everybody else around the state. And water development has been done for communities all across the state, not just Gillette. And this has to be...
in a separate bill and separate funding, because it would take all of our funding for a year just to do this one project. And I think this is the way to do it. It's kind of a hard lump to swallow, but I think that's the way we need to go.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to apologize for maybe the coarse tone of my... I've since had my glass of water, and I'm better now. My point was, I think we can treat everybody as a whole in the state with conservation. If we can spend a dollar to get the same quantity of water in our community, or $5 on developing that water, we should go with the dollar. I think it's a fiscally conservative amount, and I want to make the point, and we should all encourage our communities to look and see where we can conserve so that we don't put the demand, and the demand can really be for those communities that need the water. I did support this in committee, and I just wanted to clarify that. In all fairness, I did call our public works director in from Laramie, and I asked him how much water we use. It is very similar to the amount, so I will go back to my community and encourage them to conserve. We use about 120 gallons in the winter and about 160 in the summer.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I wasn't going to say anything, but when I heard about the low-hanging fruit, I had to say just a little bit, and that is I don't think that you can look at the quantity of water as being the factor on coal bed methane water, because unfortunately the quality is really marginal in a lot of the area. I can remember Sheridan in the early 1950s, my folks lived there, and they had to send their laundry to Buffalo, or the water would discolor it so badly. And people who grew up there would have brown teeth and whatnot. That was just kind of the way it was. And then they started getting better wells. And by the 1970s, the wells were so good that your coffee just tasted a little bit bad and not terrible like it was before. And now with these new wells and the quality of water, it is just such a pleasant situation now, and it's such an asset to those people. And we're frankly a little bit jealous of Gillette in Sheridan, not because of their water, but because it's such a vibrant city and growing and so prosperous and everything. And I think that's what we want to try to do with the legislature. At this point, we aren't legislators from our little districts. We're state legislators, and we're trying to build the whole state. And this is really an opportunity to do that. So I think we should move forward with this, because we aren't looking at just what their needs are today. Is that city is going to continue to grow, and as we see, and it spread its influence and its economy in the whole northeastern part of the state. So on and for the bill.
Representative Wallace? Representative Blake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I rise in support of this bill, and I wanted to talk about conservation here. I did a select water tour at Gillette, and we had a person from the grade schools came up and gave a presentation. I believe they start in kindergarten, maybe sooner, teaching their children in Gillette to conserve water. And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't come here lightly asking for money for the city of Gillette, but I do come here as a citizen of the state of Wyoming. And all I ask is to be treated the same as all the rest of the citizens of the state of Wyoming who have received water projects. If you look at the water project statistics, and I only go back to 1980, the Cheyenne Stage 2 project, the Dam and Collector Pipeline, and Dam and Collector were 100% grant. Then there was another grant from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, or a loan, and so it worked out to 62.7%, 37.3% loan and grant, grants being 62%. For the Green River Pipeline, it was 67.33% on both phases of that pipeline. The water treatment plant was paid separately, just like the city of Gillette's doing with their water treatment plant. For the Natrona County Regional, all of the pipelines were 67.33%. The well field and storage were 50-50. And then the water treatment plants were all 100% loan. For the Sheridan Area Water Supply, it was a 75% grant, a 25% loan for the dam and pipelines. And the water treatment plant was 100% loan to the city of Sheridan. And to the Shoshone Municipal Water Supply, it was 75% grant, 25% loan. And then the water treatment plant was 100% loan to those communities. So we're just coming here under the same rules, asking for the same thing and the same consideration that you give every other major water project in the state of Wyoming. And we're not talking about coal mines and oil fields paying this gas. These are water users through their water rates in the city of Gillette. We'll look at special use taxes, and we will exhaust every resource. We tax the full amount of the millage in our communities, and we're looking internally, and we don't come down here lightly. And we know we're fortunate, and we know that we have an ability to pay that maybe some other people don't have. And we will address that, but we will come here with self-respect and a straight face and not ask for more than we're entitled to. And all we're asking for here is what we need. Now, I heard about conservation. We have a 16 million gallon per day need. You can't conserve that. I hear about coal bed methane. Well, coal bed methane, you have to have a gathering system. So you're going to run pipelines to every 80-acre parcel in Campbell County to gather the coal bed methane water. So you've got a pipeline system that covers 7,000 square miles of Campbell County gathering the water. The coal bed methane water is of low quality, low quantity, and it's decreasing because our coal bed methane production is decreasing. It's all moving to the west into Sheridan and Johnson County. So if you look at Powder River Basin coal bed methane water production, you need to divide it between Sheridan and Johnson County and Campbell County. Then to do it, we have to pipe the coal bed methane water into a reservoir. We have to set up a whole new treatment plant and pay all the costs of that. So what I'm coming to you with, although very expensive, is the most cost-efficient method that we can give, that we can come to you with. Trust me, we've been studying this for 3 years, and when they first told me that I was going to have to come down to the Wyoming State Legislature, and then they wanted me to ask for $160 million, I said, you what? And we've sent them back to the well, and we've explored every project. I think I've answered all of the questions from all of the other folks. Oh, I did want to comment about something that my good friend Chairman Landon said about shipping water out from, or shipping laundry out from Sheridan County to Buffalo. I don't know if any of you lived in Gillette in the 70s or even visited Gillette in the 70s, but our tap water was orange. And those of us who were raised in the city of Gillette, if you look at the good representative Throne and I, you might find just a slight yellow tinge to our teeth that doesn't come from smoking. So trust me, we know about bad water. With respect to the water project that we had, our former Senator Enzi was a mayor, and through a series of loans and grants, not dissimilar to what we're asking for here today, we built and paid for that water project. This is a redundant water project for what we have. It's a 42-inch pipeline running nearly parallel to the 30-inch pipeline, 42 miles, which is the only place we can get the water from. So I'd urge your positive vote on this bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 73 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senate File 73 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Minority Whip.
Madam Chair, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I would like to introduce a colleague from the land of the great Chief Washakie and also a long-standing member of the Board of Trustees for Central Wyoming College. I'd like to introduce Caroline Mills in our gallery there.
Representative Davison.
May I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Thank you. In our balcony up there, we have a family from Big Piney. They come down every year. They're homeschooled, and they come down every year as part of their curriculum. They've been coming for years to watch the process. And it's Donna Schaefer and her son Matthew and her son William and her daughter Sarah. And Matthew's been here with Teen Pack all week, so I'd like you to welcome them.
Welcome all to the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 92. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 92, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to the Wyoming long-term...
Madam Chair, sorry to interrupt. I was asked to move 92 and...
What are you doing?
And 140 down, and so the next one will be the in-car funding.
146.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Chair. The next bill, then, for our consideration will be Senate File Number 146. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 146, introduced by Senator Nicholas, an act relating to the National Center for Atmospheric Research Computing Center. This bill was referred to Number 2 Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart, absent, Harshman, sign representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that bill number Senate File 146 do pass, and I defer the explanation of the bill to the good Representative Jorgensen.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill has been essentially worked out in the last several months. We were exposed to it on appropriations in our joint meetings before the session started, and then further in our individual meetings, as we heard mainly from the University of Wyoming, which will ultimately be the recipient of the facility. The funding is a little bit complicated by virtue of the fact that there are some contingencies that need to be worked out. We're dealing with several organizations here, the National Science Foundation, University Corporation for Atmospheric Research, National Center for Atmospheric Research, and it's a complicated management situation. It is a facility for which the property is being donated by, I believe, the Laramie County LEADS organization. Site infrastructure was provided by the Business Ready Communities funding. Power capability by Cheyenne Light, Fuel, and Power. And the computer equipment, which is in the center, will be owned and retained by the National Science Foundation. But the building and the benefits to accrue from this building and facility being located here will be gained by both the university and the community and the state of Wyoming. The reason that this bill is as long as it is because it has contingencies in the event that one of the funding techniques does not work out. And let me just briefly explain the main one of that. The National Science Foundation is limited to a 10-year commitment on these sorts of things. So if at the end of 10 years there's a need to for the university to pick up that, there is a provision to do that. That is an extremely unlikely event. But this project is, I don't know, I have a timeline. I don't know if you have one. I believe you do in the handout that was should be on your desk. It's very straightforward handout, but it does say Berger, House District 51 in the upper right-hand corner. And if you go to the last two pages of that, there is a pretty detailed timeline that explains the steps that need to be taken before construction begins and then the facility completed. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to entertain them now. I urge you to approve this on first reading. Thank you.
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one question on page 4, section C.
And this is the provision that allows the University of Wyoming Board of Trustees to issue revenue bonds in order to pay off the industrial development bonds. But there's a qualification there at the end of that paragraph that says if the revenue bonds are, if the state treasurer still owns them. And a couple questions. First, would there be a scenario where perhaps the state treasurer would not own those bonds still? And if somebody else did own the bonds, is there any reason why we wouldn't still want to allow the issuance of those revenue bonds in order to buy or pay off those industrial development bonds?
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to answer those questions the best I can. I think the reason the wording is in there, they were trying to cover every possible eventuality. I think it's unlikely, since the state treasurer intends to purchase the bonds initially, that they would dispose of them. Should they dispose of them, my own personal feeling is we are under an obligation to take care of those obligations as a state.
Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman Kraft. In response and in support of Pete's explanation on that, revenue bonds are oftentimes sold when the conditions of that market are such. But we have to be mindful of the fact that that market is an auction market, and it's not a made market like trading on a security on a legitimate exchange. So there could be an event of time when the market would be such, the auction would be such, where it would be to the advantage of the bondholder to sell that bond at a premium. And you wouldn't want to put the state treasurer then in the position of having to try and match that if the holder of that that bond desired to try and exchange it again. So this is permissive and does not put the bonds in jeopardy or put the state treasurer in a position where they wouldn't want to buy the bonds at a premium price relative to the market itself. So on and for the amendment.
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank the good representative from District 29.
Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 146 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 146 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, excuse me, Mr. Majority.
Thank you, Madam Leader. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion that the Committee of the Whole rise and report. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 42, recommended do pass. Senate File 124, recommended do pass. Senate File 69, recommended do pass. Senate File 104, recommended do pass. Senate File 73, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 146, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Kraft, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 271, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 2, Street Rods and Custom Vehicles, the House bill listed above, passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote. Ayes 20, noes 10. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 272, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 6, Game and Fish Trapping. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 273, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 10, Subdivisions Requirements. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 22, noes 8. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 274, House Bill 16, Cottage Food Industry. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 275, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 22, Qualification for Veterans Tax Exemption. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 276, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 26, Circuit Magistrate Jurisdiction. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 277, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 35, Election Judges. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 278, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 48, Game Bird Farms Raising Sage Grouse. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 279, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 58, Responsibilities of Injectors and Pore Space Owners. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 280, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 75, Subdivisions Water Supply Study. The bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Ayes 27, noes 3. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 281, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 80, Sequestration Site Utilization. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 23, no 7. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message 282, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 90, Wind River Reservation Education Programs. Ayes 21, noes 9. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 283, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 165, Adult Adoption. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 285, Mr. Speaker, the bills The Senate did concur on House amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. Senate File 19, Costs of Emergency Detention and Hospitalization, Ayes 21, Noes 9, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 4, Education, to whom was referred Senate File 52, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bechtel, Connolly, Kraft, Yagi, Lubnow, McKim, McComey, Teeters. No, Dirk, sign representing McComey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 114, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Swan, and Zerdan, signed Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 12, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Lubnow, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, signed representing Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 26, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Lubnow, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, signed representing Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 28, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Lubnow, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, signed representing Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 49, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen. No, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I move that the House adjourn until Friday, February 20th, 2009 at 10 a.m.
10 a.m. You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're adjourned till tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.